You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Well, what's up, guys? MMAfighting.com, the team's here. Jose Youngs and Esther Lynn speaking with UFC middleweight champion Israel Adesanya and head coach of City Kickboxing, Eugene Behrman. Big fight on Saturday, I guess, right?
Yeah, big one.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So your last fight, it was obviously in Melbourne. You're in that, that Australasia area. You're now in Las Vegas, your first fight since Brad Tavares. So I'm personally curious, what is the difference in fight week like to then, where you have probably more media locally rather than you're basically flying all the way across the world now to do media, right?
Yeah. Even flying over like for a day at a time for LA, for Houston, just to like do the face off and whatnot. And for UFC 243, it was a lot of media, but my team handles that. They chopped down all the fat from it. So we never really get inundated with too much at the end of the day. But this week was pretty good. My busiest day was Tuesday. And then the rest, like, I mean, this is probably my last media for the day, and then I can just chill and then we'll train later on.
What about you, Coach? Like, I imagine media was probably higher. Demand for you yourself is probably higher, closer to home, right?
Yeah, I don't do that much. Like, I do a lot of ones, like ad hoc ones. Like, I'm just passing by. People be like, "Can I interview?" And I'll just pass by. Yeah, I always say yes because I'm just.
He's a nice guy.
I don't want to be an asshole about sure. It. Like, ESPN. I did ESPN today at this one. I was just standing there and. Back of the restaurant, and they came and got me. I was like, "Yeah, cool." So I do a lot of ones like that, but I don't do it too much.
Anyone come up to you? And I spoke with Derek Lewis about this in Houston. He says when he fights close to home, a lot of family members just emerge. They're like, "I'm your cousin." I was like, "I've never seen you before." That happened a lot. You guys?
It's hard to happen for me in New Zealand because obviously my family is immediate, but for him, probably.
More with friends. Like, you get a lot of people that's like, "Hey, remember me? I'm your friend from way back. I'm like, you're my acquaintance. I haven't spoken to you for 10 years."
Sure.
So, yeah, that pops up for sure.
So last weekend, 2 weeks ago in Auckland, then pretty much just friends are hitting you up for tickets. But did it feel like a lot of pressure to travel and do the press conference? You were doing the press conference there, come out to LA, go to Houston, like...
I believe you said you had spider when you got back.
Yeah, straight away. Like, I landed 6:30 a.m., went back home, napped for like 2 hours maybe, and then straight to the gym for spider. But we brought John and Mike, and Frank was already in Houston, so I still got my work in Houston. But yeah, spider, it's just the worst workout of your life. It's like just fight gone bad, like the worst case scenario. So for me going through that, and we've done it every day and according to the fight time, every week, sorry, according to the fight time. So when it comes to fight time, my body's already used to it for the last 10 weeks. Like, oh, I've been doing this already. And that's only if you have to push. He told me for the last one, it's only if you have to push when you get to deep waters, and you've seen that we can swim.
So this spider training, is it regimented around your specific opponent? Like,
yeah,
Yoel Romero, Yoel Romero presents far more problems. Well, not far more, but like different problems than probably say Derek Brunson. So this spider, the worst case scenarios with Romero are probably different than worst case scenarios with Whittaker, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's regimented around the energy systems and the energy systems that we're going to use for that particular opponent. So for Romero, it's a lot different to some of our previous opponents. So we adjust the workout accordingly.
How do you prepare for someone like Romero, though, where just from the outside looking in, even in the Costa fight, it looked like he was willing to lose 4 minutes if he can land that one punch. Like, even in the Weidman fight, he's like, he beat me the first, I beat him the second, and then I just finished him in the final round. Like, and I don't want to bring him up because of a fight, but like John Jones has said, like, the unpredictable eventually becomes predictable when you're preparing for an opponent like that.
Yeah, and that's exactly the case with Romero. Like, the unpredictable has become the predictable. There's a pretty clear pattern in terms of his energy use. And you'll be surprised how much of an identifiable pattern it is from fight to fight, because it's almost exact down to the minute where he decides to expend energy and the minute where he decides to switch off the... switch off and start to consume energy.
Sure.
It's almost identical.
That's through you and Adam, right?
Yeah, it's just...
Adam's like done the breakdown with you and stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it's just something we look at because it's important. it's important to know where he's going to expend the most energy at what particular time and what particular positions. The whole gantry of energy use over the whole fight. We've looked at the entire thing.
Also, you've been incredibly active as not just a fighter, but it feels like you've been a champion for a while, but this is technically your first official title defense after second title defense, my mistake. But even looking at Dan Hooker, like he's been pretty active. Brad Riddell just fought. Like even Kai Kara France had that quick turnaround. So what is the secret with you guys where you can fight so often, but then you look at AKA, you had that time frame where like DC, Kane, Rockhold, and Khabib, they all couldn't stay healthy at the same time.
Well, I mean, it's being in the gym all the time, so not taking too much time off between fights.
Sure.
It's like using this window of opportunity that everybody has in their career. And it's training. Like, and everybody talks about training smart, but it's one thing to talk about it and then actually do it. I mean, yeah, like our sparring, if you look at our sparring and you look at AKA sparring, they won't even be, they will look completely different. If you look at our sparring and you look at the way that they're sparring Albuquerque, it will be completely
mm-hmm.
different. That's one of the big secrets of our gym is we identified very early that we need to prioritize our skills in whatever we're doing. And not necessarily our brawn or some of our other athletic credentials. We just need to completely prioritize skill. That's one of the secrets why these guys can be so active.
I wanted to kind of go off on a tangent. You were saying that one of the secrets is that you don't take long breaks. You go back into the gym. So after you won your title, I assume you want to go on vacation and stuff, right?
Atlanta, so, I went back to Nigeria because I felt... Because even throughout this, my UFC career itself, I've probably skipped on 5 trips.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to go to Europe. Then I think Anderson Silva in New York came up.
Weren't you supposed to go to a wedding too?
Yeah. Even this one, like I skipped my boy Slava. Shout out to Slava and Tyler. Congrats. I skipped their wedding because I felt like to go there up north in New Zealand and come back would fuck with my time frame. So I was like, no, I can't. So I've sacrificed so much. But after the Atlanta fight, I went to Nigeria, went to Dubai, and I just kind of messed around for a bit, and then I came back to the gym. So that one was after five or six fights, like back to back. So, you know, you can't just put your foot on the gas. You have to hit the brakes, pull the handbrakes, and relax for a while. So that was my last long break.
Is it different now that you're not chasing anyone? Like, we
still
spoke.
I called this guy out.
That's very true. Well, we spoke at your... before your Vittori fight, and you kind of hinted that you had a plan, like, I'm going to beat this guy, and then I'm going to beat this guy, and then this guy. Now you don't have to basically, they're all chasing you now. You don't have to beat another person to reach the title.
Yeah, I mean, like, if someone like his manager, Abe Kawai, they would have probably advised me not to take this fight, a manager like that. But I'm like, why? That's the guy that everyone's scared of. That's the guy that's supposed to be the one. Like, since my UFC debut, I've always seen, feed him to your marrow, it's over. Feed him to a good wrestler. And I'm like, okay, let's see. Like, you guys aren't paying attention. You're just, like, a lot of experts really have casual brains sometimes. But, yeah, I've seen that. And, yeah, we're up for the challenge, man. That's it. We're just up for the challenge. It's about legacy. It's about skills. Not just about this mentality of the... Because that's still from Hollywood. It's still ingrained in the culture that people think the guy with the muscles.
Yeah.
Like, even when I was in China... Sometimes some of the people come like, oh, no muscle, no muscle. And then, like, I knock their guy in the second round. And then, what are you saying about no muscle? They don't understand the skill that's required. So, yeah, just up for the challenge, man.
Eugene, you didn't have to, like, kind of pull him back. There's never been an opponent where you're like, I don't know if you want to fight him right now. You didn't have to, like.
Not that I can think of. Not that he's told me.
Nah, I mean, like, it's. If you're doing the work, you can fight anybody. That's the important thing. Like, if like the thing that kills fighters at this point in their career is that they don't come back to the gym after the fight.
Mm-hmm. How do you ensure that you
he's on my ass? Where the fuck are you? I've been in LA. I've been doing press. I've been doing the world tour. Let me come back. But he just. I know he does it just because he still has to stay on me just so I don't slip. because I am human.
He does it himself, though.
Yeah, but I do it myself because when I was younger, you can admit, I wasn't always like that. But now, Dan came to help me with my spider. Brad came to help me with my spider, my last one. Like, afterwards, you have to come back. Like, some of these gyms, like you said, the AKAs, the big names, you know, you get your fight done and then you fuck off. And then that's it till your next camp. And they don't give their body back to the people that gave their body for them. So that's the culture that we've created. Like, you know, your boys put their fucking bodies on the line. Some people have gotten hurt, freak accidents, you know, in the gym because they're helping you out. And then when it's your turn, you don't return the favor. That's a shit friend. That's a shit partner. So, yeah, that's the culture that he's created along with the other coaches to give back to the gym.
These guys also have lofty goals. Like,
yeah.
To the honest truth of, if you want to be a UFC champion, you can't take a break. Like, you can come to training and you're not, like, working at, like, with the pedal down, but you have to be in the gym all the time. If you set these lofty goals, I want to be champion, I want to fight. You know, you see himself, John Jones, Stipe Miocic.
You said that one. I'll take it. But I like that fight.
The journey to those fights has already begun years out. Like, you have to look at it like that. And so, you know, I can't have these guys know that they can't take 2 months off here, 2 months off there, 2 months off here. Before you know it, out of a 12-month period, they've only been in the gym for half of it. You aren't going to be able to reach those lofty goals that you're setting yourself. It's like not a reality. So if these guys want to get out there and they want to set these goals and they want to make them public, then they have to do the work that's required to reach there. Otherwise, you're just talking all the bullshit, and they know that.
Have you seen a rise in interest in maybe someone from America wanting to come join your gym? Because, I mean, you look at Jackson's, there was a point where there was so many countries under one roof just because it was the Jackson name. But now you guys are at the forefront of combat sports right now. I'm sure you're in demand.
Yeah, I mean, I get about 5-6 emails a week. But there's only one way to come to our gym, and you have to come through someone.
Really?
Yeah. So there's some foreign fighters. There's 3 or 4 guys that live full time in New Zealand now, but they've all come through someone. So we've had someone that we know that's been able to vet them. To be like, this guy's a good guy. He's going to fit in well within the new environment. He's not going to be an asshole. He's a great training partner. They've all come through someone that we know.
So you have basically a screening process where, like, in America, you see fighters kind of, oh, I lost this fight, I'm going to bounce around to a few gyms then settle.
You can't just show up. If you show up,
just haven't paid money and expect to train. Yeah. Like, that's just not how it works. You have to somehow be connected through someone and that we can, and then that's the vetting process we use. Like, it's not, like, money, like, in terms of that, is not what we're interested in.
No.
We could make a lot of money if we did, but we always talk about the gym and how it's a special environment. But to maintain that special environment, we can't open the floodgates.
Like, even for the Robert fight, I talked to him, and I already knew he would have done it, but, like, I made sure because there were some Aussies that were coming into the gym, and they're now, like, some of my favorite training partners. But I was just like, can you ensure that this guy's not a spy and stuff? He reassured me, like, bro, he kind of took it as an insult, like, the fuck do you think I am? You know, and I was like, nah. And so I just for my own conscience, just so I can get it out there. And I put it on the table and it's like, fuck, I've already done the vetting process.
All,
it's already
all those
done.
Guys have come through someone that I know or for a friend of a friend. And I've been able to, like, know, find out about them as a person and then obviously talk to them and trust them completely.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's why our gym can exist harmoniously. You never hear about a problem coming out of our gym.
Yeah. I was going to say, in America, it seems like you guys are all the way on the other side of the world. Like, could this work? If you guys were in America?
I don't know.
Well, it could work. It comes down to your principles, right? Yeah. It's like, you know, some gyms have opened the floodgates and been like, you know what? Like, we're just going to...
Welcome. Exactly.
If you pay enough money, you can come and train alongside John Jones, or you can come and train alongside Kamaru Usman, or if the money's right. Like, we just, as a principal, we're just not down with that. And there's nothing, like... So, but people have to make money. People got kids to feed and bills to pay. So that's fine. That's just not the way we're doing things.
You had to be vetted then at some
point. I kind of did. Actually, the first fight I had with him in my corner, it's a famous story that's been happening around now. It's like a friend who trained with them previously when I was living in Wanganui was like, I know a gym. you know, and I got a fight off Facebook, an amateur MMA fight.
Yeah.
And then he roped him into cornering me. But then he saw how shit I was on the ground and he's like, oh, well, good riddance. But he's already met me. But then like his partner also saw me fight kickboxing in Whangarei, which is a town up north, like a few months prior. And then she was like, yeah, he's good, da, 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 da. And then what he saw was shit. He's like, I don't have to see this guy again. But I was already kind of vetted through, I think it was Denny, who introduced us.
I knew someone. We had a mutual acquaintance.
Yeah, so I was vetted. But I didn't pass my initiation, if you put it that way. I sucked in my first, it was at the ABA as an MMA fight that I got my ass whooped, an amateur, so no punches to the face. But
that wasn't a viewing process. Like, that showed you was your shit Friday.
Well, I was going to say, like, that's my next question. What did you see in this guy?
Well,
I think his partner was very, the one.
Just off that brief meeting, it wasn't like he was very polite and, you know, like you could say he was a nice person, but you just couldn't tell much about his fighting ability. That's all. But, yeah.
Yes, so, I wasn't an asshole. Yeah, yeah, I wasn't one of those guys who, oh, yeah, no, I know this, I know that. Yeah.
Well, going off of that, I mean, you clearly have been a student of the game. You can bring up these events, like you talk about Anderson Silva, you can bring up a lot. But you've watched the sport a lot. You've seen inside the octagon what works, what doesn't work, how it evolves. But even outside, I feel like watching you is like watching your interviews. I go, this guy's had media training for sure. But you haven't. You've seen this all. Exactly. You've seen other fighters make these mistakes in front of the cameras, maybe not be themselves, maybe come off fake, and that's not you. So it feels like to me, looking in, that you're also using what you've seen out, like a cautionary tale for people outside and in front of the camera, as well as inside the octagon.
Yeah, and also we had a plan. Like when I got to him, first thing was like, I want to be a UFC fighter. Because I felt like I could be the best in the world. But then kickboxing took over and I was really good at that. But we were still training, grappling on the low for years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why when I got in the UFC, everyone thought, oh, I'll just take him down. But apart from that, everything else like the embeds, the countdown, I don't really have as much time these days to be really embedded in all that extra stuff. But when I was younger, it's all I did. Just all the videos, all of my favorite fighters. You know, I would watch the interviews, study them and watch the embeds and see how things were like, okay, I was ready for all of this, preparing yourself. So it's not just for inside the cage, it's also everything outside the cage. And also, like he said, he had a plan to get us to the UFC through kickboxing, through the international circuit in China or Australia, elsewhere, and then eventually jump into the UFC. But I wasn't 23 and the youngest champion in the UFC, young, dumb, and full of cum, making all these mistakes. I was 28, I think, when I got in the UFC. And I felt like, I said, I had my metamorphosis at 28 where I felt like I became more of a man than a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And all my mistakes I've made away from the spotlight, and I've learned from them. That's the difference between me and other people. I learn from my mistakes, and I don't make them again. I make new mistakes.
Yeah. When you watch these embeddeds coming up in the sport, and then all of a sudden you are the focus this whole week, was anything different than you imagine? Like, if I would, like, say you watch, like, Dan Henderson Cormier, UFC 173, and then all of a sudden you're behind the one in front of the camera. Did you expect someone to be like some way and then it wasn't and then vice versa?
Yeah, there's variables. There's definitely variables, but you have to adapt to them. But for me, it just feels normal now. Like some things I still get deja vu moments or like, whoa, that was cool. I still get surprised by certain things. But for me, it's part of life now. You have to accept it. You have to accept all this because a lot of people shy away from it, and that's how they crumble. But for me, nah. You just have to own it. Even him, he hates all this. He doesn't like. But
I don't hate it.
Not hate, but like he doesn't like to be in front of the cameras. But he understands now.
He
understands. No, I don't gravitate. I don't like it either. I like my privacy. But he understands now. Like this is part of the game. This is what's gonna sell our brand. It's only going to sell City Kickboxing. This is what's going to push us forward. And I think his wife is the one who had to beat it in. And you need to get in front of the camera and stop denying all these interviews. Yeah. So now he's here.
Do you wish you didn't have to do interviews? You could just show up and fight?
Oh, that's his. That's his. He'd rather be back at the ABA. That's the local boxing club in Auckland. But like this is at this level, you have to. So you have to embrace it. You can't shy away from it. And I'm pretty good at it. So yeah, I just own it.
What's the weirdest place you've been recognized?
Ooh, what's your one? The weirdest place I think about.
Not so much recognized, but we used to fight in some places in China, where clearly there had been never a tourist set foot.
Really?
And then that would be the first non-Chinese people they'd ever seen in person.
Yeah.
And a whole street would just stop.
Mm.
They would just shut down.
They just stare at
it. Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
Not really.
So they see a basketball.
Yeah, they just see a tall black man. Yeah, your basketball player.
I have the best record with staring contests with old people.
Yeah.
In China. Like, literally. But I break it by smiling at them, but, like, they just... Like, they saw Bigfoot or something.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah.
You know, we were going to places where there would be never be a need for tourists to go. Mm. There's no tourist attractions. There's only industry. And there's literally never been a tourist
there. Mm.
And then, of course, you're going to, like... It's almost like seeing an alien.
Yeah, Bigfoot.
I've only ever seen them on a screen or on TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Appearing there live. They're gonna stare like it's
yeah. Too. My weirdest one probably would be a bathroom, men's bathroom. And it's all like they'll recognize me. I'm like, yeah, hold on, let me just finish pissing first. But then the worst one was one time after I said, let me finish, I'll see you outside. And I could feel someone, and I looked and I see him like on his phone. And you know when people like bring their phone, I was like, what the fuck are you doing? And then like Tim was like, hey, the fuck out. And I denied him a photo because I like, fuck you. I'm taking a piss. You asked for what I said outside. And then you whip your phone out acting like you're texting, but I know what you're about to do. So I was like, nah, I'm not playing with that.
Who's the, in your mind, the coolest person that's recognized you?
Jamie Foxx. That was Vegas on his birthday, which is my dad's birthday as well, December 12th. So we got invited to Lil Jon's booth or his DJ table.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a booth behind it. And I missed him in Macau because I went up this one night. Remember I fought in Macau and I stayed there for a while with John and James? We went out like my first weekend there. I was training for the fight, but then like went out the first weekend there and I got like absolutely fucked up. I went to go see Lil Jon and then I missed the whole show because I was too much. And then I told him the story, he cracked up and then he talks about happy birthday, Jamie Foxx. I'm like, wait, what? And Jamie Foxx is right there. And I was just like, oh shit. And he's doing the Instagram live and he sees me and he goes, I'm like, yeah, my man. And he daps me up, we have a few words. But for me, I think because I'm not normally starstruck, I compose myself. But for me, it's because it was such a surprise. It took me by a shock, and I was like, oh, shit. And he was just so cool. Yeah, so that's the coolest person so far that's recognized me.
What about you, Coach?
Oh, no one recognizes me, but the coolest person I've seen was probably Mike Tyson.
You're starstruck by
one of the UFCs.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, I'm like, you wouldn't think I'd be starstruck, but then you're kind of like, you don't know until you're in front of you. And
yeah.
Like, he's walking with Dana. You kind of double take like shit. Is that the mic? I grew up watching the guy, you know. So.
Yeah. No, I see that at the PI. Like even when you walk through the PI at the cafeteria, I don't know if you guys have been, but he was walking through, but you could see all the fighters, all the personnel, everyone just like, oh snap, Mike Tyson, and everyone's thinking he's coming into the cafeteria, but he's walking through. But you could see he's still Mike Tyson. You know?
Different level of stardom.
Yeah, it's like everyone was just like, oh, even Dan, after he beat Gilbert Burns backstage, Dan never asked for photos, but he was trying to get a photo with the Mike Tyson. So it shows you the level of, you know, the pedestal everyone puts him on. And rightfully so, he's done so much for the sport, for combat sports, you know?
Well, kind of going off that, after the passing of Kobe Bryant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, from Nigeria, too, a basketball player, someone asked him, like, what do you remember of Kobe? And he goes, for me growing up, that's who I wanted to be. Like, he set all of these standards for us. And then someone goes, what does it feel like that now there's a 13-year-old watching you and thinking of the same thing? For you, when you look at Mike Tyson, there's got to be young fighters now looking at you the same way they look that you guys look at Mike Tyson. Has that thought ever crossed your mind of like, wow, like
heaps early on as well? Because when I got into the UFC, I was like, I don't want to be like, you know, fake like some people and then act all holier than thou, then go crash into a pregnant lady. You know, I know I'm a
shame.
But I know I'm a human and I know I'll make mistakes and I know I learn from them, but I never want to put on a fake persona and act like these guys who want to all be Nike sponsor. Mm-hmm. You know, so I know kids are looking up to me, but I feel like they can still take inspiration from my story and my character and my rise in this whole game. And I just want to keep that same energy. And even like we gave away a boombox at the workout to this little girl, and for me she was so genuine and so nice, and I know people like that will look up to me, but it still doesn't stop me from living my life. But at the same time, I know there's eyes on me, and even in my close circle, I know there's eyes on me, people that look up to me, but I'm like, I just have to hold myself to the highest standard. But
we do. I think one thing he's become a bit better at nowadays is he's aware that with this power, you can choose to do nothing with it, but you can also do something great with it.
Yeah.
And you can inspire people who need inspiration or people that aren't doing so well. You can change their life within a fleeting moment.
Mm.
And I think that he's like gotten more aware of that. Like, and we do, man, we do a lot of stuff that people don't hear about it. Like we have a big thing in our group of fighters that, you know, charitable type work. Mm. It's charitable type work. It shouldn't be done in front of a camera. Otherwise,
that's I was going to ask that.
Just for the
best way of giving. No, straight up. No, honestly, best way. No, JC said best form of giving is anonymous to anonymous. Or by, I mean, people do it all the time for if sometimes for a cause, if mm-hmm. our platform can bring attention to a cause,
that's
I don't mind.
Different.
But like what we do so much.
Stuff we do.
Oh yeah.
That we don't put on camera.
Of course.
For all the kids and all
Yeah, even people in our gym and stuff like that, like, but it's just we do it because it feels good to give. And people forget that mm-hmm. sometimes. Like, when you give, it actually feels good to do something nice for someone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
it
I think that's lost sometimes.
Camera.
Yeah, never. I was like, oh, here's some fruits. Yeah, oh, can you just take a selfie real quick? Like, oh, I cringe at that, man. And I know you're trying to inspire people to give, yeah, but you can do that without putting someone, a human, and degrading them to just this.
Oh, you're talking about people getting on the camera to
like, oh, hey
things.
There, yeah. Oh, here's a sandwich.
Yeah.
You know, oh,
yeah.
I'm a nice guy.
I mean, you
gross.
It is something.
It's weird.
There's something very weird about charity work that goes on Instagram. Like,
yeah.
It takes the genuineness off it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we do an awful lot of that work, but I'm definitely against putting that in the public eye. It doesn't feel right to me.
Mm,
you guys that do it for genuine reasons. It doesn't need to be on, and you know, in the public eye. Don't do it at all. So that's something that he's gotten really good at using the position he's in now to help people, you know, behind the scenes. So that's pretty cool.
I had a question about. I want to circle back to when you said that. You know, you'd been thinking about all of this. You were ready for all of these, the cameras, all this stuff, like. How do you make sure that you're visualizing and preparing yourself, but not getting ahead or like, you know, building up too much mm-hmm. of an ego from imagining all of this?
I have a counterbalance. That's why we work well together. It's like yin and yang. So he's a guy that can tell me when to pull the rein, like, hey, calm down or go get him. You know, like, it's just... experience
I think
as well.
I think our team does it as well.
Yeah, oh yeah, mm-hmm. constantly.
I think our team, our culture. Like you can't, like. It happens and you see it happen in environments and other gyms where the fighters aren't being put in check.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at all of this, like mm-hmm. it can be so easy to lose yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is another life compared to how most fighters used to live. This is mm-hmm. complete, all the glitz and glamour, it's a completely different life, but. For us, it's like as soon as you start looking like you're getting a little bit too big for your britches, the other boys will be there to remind you where you came from.
Yeah,
and that and that's like yeah, that's a very humble way of bringing people back down to earth.
Like I've been to certain gyms all over the world, and there was one gym in particular that I went to train, and the one of the fighters like yelled at the coach, and the coach was like. You know, you can't stop fucking around. Like, fuck, I'm not fucking around. My fucking glove's slipping up. And in my head, I was like, oh, you can talk to your coach like that.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I looked at the coach and the coach just goes, I was like, and then we just kept on sparring. But for me, I was like, yeah, I couldn't do that. I would never do that. Like, this is still martial arts, mixed martial arts. Martial arts is that code of respect with your sensei. You can't just fire off at him like you're a diva, you're a superstar, or whatnot. You don't want to create a monster, you know. And a lot of, we've seen it happen in combat sports, even in Auckland, in our region. You see some athletes get too big for their
mm-hmm.
for themselves, even. So yeah, like I said, like the team will be there to.
Setting a standard and just sticking to it, and it doesn't matter where you are, what your status is in the sport.
Mm.
The other day. We had a perfect example the other day.
What did I do?
I had 85 people sparring, and I had 84 people wearing headgear.
Oh, no.
And he decided that he thought, oh, it's a hot day, or my headgear isn't fitting.
Oh, right. It wasn't that. It was because every sparring, every camp, my last sparring, I take the headgear off my last sparring just
anyway,
so I can, like...
he asked me if he could take the heat gear off, and I said no, and then he kind of walked away in the sulk, and then I yelled and cursed at him and said, you know, like, you are not any different to the 84 other people here. Mm-hmm. If the whole gym stopped and looked at us, and I said, put your effing headgear back on and get back to sparring. Mm-hmm. It's like, these are just, it's just standard practice. Like,
does the rest of the gym hold you accountable too? Like, all of your
teams? Not everyone, but certain people who can, like, I mean, Brad, Dan.
The senior guys, the coaches.
Yeah,
but yeah, the coaches.
But also, like, he knows, like, he holds himself mm-hmm. accountable.
I always do.
There's, out of those 85 fighters, there's 60 of them are younger than him, trying to beat him up, trying to get to where he is. So it's like, they're looking at you. Like, they're looking at you, and he knows that. So he knows that he has to set the standard for the next generation of people coming up underneath him.
Yeah. Do you think you'd make a good coach?
No. Fuck off. I'm trying to see what can I throw at him. Hey, let me say one thing. I am in the corner. Hold on. In the corner, when I corner people, I am undefeated. When I corner people, I'm undefeated. I'll leave it there.
You guys love training around lunchtime. If you feel like it,
oh,
show up about lunchtime. I don't mind if you show up at 2, even though I said lunchtime. Oh, man. It'd be the worst gym.
Let me just say, undefeated as a cornerman. Put it that way. I'll leave the fruits on the table.
How many is that? 1-0, 2-0?
No, I've cornered many of you. He's trusted me. I've even cornered Kai in China. And many times, like, go to China with this guy. Go corner. Go corner.
Put it this way: if it's a definite win, he's cornering.
What? That was a hard fight for Kai.
If I know the guy, if I know there's no way the guy's losing, then he's scoring.
Sure, we get it. This is what I mean. Now I'm fucking sweaty. Get out.
One of the last, you started last year, no champions now, you have two, right?
Yeah.
How do you keep going?
We keep that same energy. Like, everyone keeps saying, like, have you trained different for this fight?
Mm-hmm.
Have you trained? I'm like, bro, when we fought Anderson Silva, we wrestled a lot. Like, the same
really?
Amount. Yeah, we wrestled with VO2 max, the everyday 10 a.m. sessions, all the grappling, and then we do our stand-up work, we do our clinch work as well, and conditioning. But we keep the same energy. Each fight we have is the biggest fight of our life. So this fight was no different. This fight was no different. It's the biggest fight of our life. So we keep that same energy of going all in and being well prepared for this fight. And I feel like we are. Even the open workout, I was going to do like, shout out to Mark Hunt. I was going to do like a little Mark Hunt. It's like, man, let me just chill and save myself tonight. But you get there and you feel the fans and you see that. I'm like, every time I'm just like, all right, let's go. Then I start jabbing. My jab was fast. I felt on Andre's side, I could feel like some of the kicks, the power like behind it. And it just reassures me that, yeah, we're prepared. We're ready. We're fucking ready, man.
Well, I wanted to ask you about your workout. Watching all the other fighters, they're doing like long combinations like this, and you're like one shot, like mm-hmm. 1-2, and mm-hmm. that's your style. Like, I remember watching the Brunson fight,
mm-hmm.
and you wobbled him. 9 times out of 10, a fighter's blowing their gas on that one, and you just looked at him, and you just like walk, and you're like looking for a second, and then you throw one, and you catch him like. So I don't want to say how do you do that against Romero, but Romero seems a guy like you saw against Costa. He goes, look at that. And then Costa looks over and then all of a sudden it's like.
He's a juice head. Yeah. He's a dumb, like, there's nothing up here for Costa. He's dumb. Like, that's silly. Like, so me and Anderson, we're playing around as well with little games like that.
Yeah.
He's the best at it.
Yeah.
He's not better than Romero. So I was able to play games with Anderson. I was able to be like, you know, I almost got you. And then like when he tried to knee me, I was like, not today. But I have tricks as well. I'm a veteran in this game. People forget like my extensive kickboxing background. There's a lot of different looks that I can give as well. I mean, what am I going to do? Oh, look there. And then jab me in the corner or whatever. I don't know. But like, yeah, I've seen a lot. I don't think there's anything he's going to bring with trickery that I haven't seen yet.
Like playing the possum. Like
We've seen. We know he plays possum. He'll act like he's hurt. I saw that last week as well. That was a bad stoppage.
I was going to ask about
it. Yeah, that was a bad stoppage. The referee should not have stopped that because I even watched it and I saw the guy was, I've done it in sparring. I do it in sparring sometimes. If I get hit in the body, even if it doesn't hurt, and then they come in or something, I just pop, and I catch them. Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I play possum, but I've thought about doing it in a fight, but for that very reason, I don't, because Mike Angle said it happened to him when he fought Jason Suddy. He said he played possum and the referee was like, nah. So I don't want that to happen to me. Well, I might one day. You never know. I mean, hey, this is. I mean, this is what we play, man. This is the game. My game is deception. This is one thing he's taught me very well, is how to deceive people with my strikes. Sure. So, we'll see.
Is anything caught off? Have you fallen for that inside the octagon?
Nope. Let me see. Different ones, standard ones.
Well, there's been occasions where guys have been like being able to really show a really good poker face.
Mm. Yeah.
Kelvin.
Oh, yeah.
That's Kelvin. One thing he told me before the Kelvin fight, he told me is like, no matter what, don't be discouraged. You're hurting him. Before the fight, he told me the day before the fight, like, you're hitting him, you're going to keep hitting him, but don't be discouraged. You're hurting him. And same thing. That's why I was just like, cool, I'm ready to die. Let's go. Like, I knew, even in the fifth round, he's there. And I call that moment Ese Diablo because he's just looking at the camera. And he had like these little horns. And I was like, let's go to hell, you and me. So then in there, I knew I was hurting him. I was like, I trusted his word. Like, I'm hurting him. And that's like dropping him after the second round, dropping him in the fourth round, or fifth round, sorry. And then he was right. Just because he had a poker face doesn't mean he's not hurt. He couldn't handle it. Eventually, your body will crumble, no matter who you are.
How does it feel to be tied to another human like that? Where now when they're going to bring up you, your legacy, they can't talk about you without Kelvin attached to you.
Only if we talk about that fight, like my whole legacy, but like you saw today at the workout, they gave us the award for fighting.
Yeah,
the year. And I was like, and I gave him a shout out because, like I said, it's not just me, I didn't do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very durable, strong Mexicano. These Mexicans, like, they're hard to knock out.
We are.
It's possible. Oh, you mentioned that as well. Don't try. Bad joke. But yeah, I mean, like, I gave him a shout out because I can't do this alone, you know. Mm-hmm. I had a good dance partner, you know. And we salsa together very well that night.
Do you imagine that fight will have to be run back at some point?
And if he climbs, I don't do it just for fun. I mean, if he climbs the ranks again and if he gets to the point he needs to get in the division, maybe 2 or 3 good wins, like solid wins. I was going to see what happened with Darren Till.
Yeah,
He had starched Darren Till, he might be the guy I'm fighting this weekend.
Really?
You know? But it's not just up to me. He's got to have a say in it as well. But I think if Darren Till had done the same thing to him, it might be Darren Till this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is just how the cards flow. But I think definitely he's a guy that he's hard to beat, and we'll see him again.
I wanted to finish up with, you were talking about dancing. So mm-hmm. What do you have planned for your dance-off move?
I'm not doing anything crazy. Like, I wasn't going to do anything for this fight. I wasn't. But then I had this metamorphosis on 10th of February, the day my cat got run over, that let me know, like, yeah, life's short. And then I had this metamorphosis in my car for like 3 hours where I got these messages through music, listening to my old phone, old tracks I haven't heard in so long. And I've been there before, and I just knew, like, I have to make this visually, aesthetically pleasing, because it's my pay-per-view in America, my first one in mm-hmm. Vegas properly, and I want the numbers to really show, and I need some moments. So yeah, I'm not going to be like Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury.
I was going to say.
Or like anything like that. I'm not going to, no, that's not what I do. But like, I'm just going to walk. I'm just going to walk, but I think it's going to be visually, aesthetically pleasing for everyone to watch.
Do you wish UFC entrances could do that?
Nah, I mean, you know, they're not always a fan, but it's my show. You know, I'm the main event, so I'll let them know what's up, but I mean, he's not a fan of it. Dana's not a fan of it. But I'm like, I don't care. It's my fucking show. So it's how it goes.
How have the American fans been treating you this week?
Good. Oh, everyone's nice to me face to face. I mean, it's different online, you know. Yeah. But everyone's nice to me face to face. Even a guy checked another guy who was saying, he says he's good. Your man's going to be there for an hour saying your man's going to fuck you up. I'm like, really? Stay here and watch. And then the guy just like, like, you see them all freeze when it's face-to-face. But yeah, I love America. One thing I love America is the food. Oh, God. They went to Popeye's last night. Was that you guys?
Popeye's?
That spicy chicken sandwich. There was a lot of hype about it last year.
Yeah, it was.
But I'm getting like 4 of them. I'm getting 4 of them after this fight.
Get Derek Lewis to bring you.
Nah, he's in Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I was in Houston, maybe. But like, yeah, definitely. There's also like pictures of stuff I keep taking. Pictures of things I'm like.
Things to remember to eat
later.
Yeah,
I'm going to eat. There's a pecking duck here as well. I see the way they slice it. It's always on the TV, on the ads. I'm like, getting that.
You said to your face they're nice to you. And mm-hmm. I've talked to someone that, not you know, that's not so much style, but he said, Michael Venom Page says he gets compared to you a lot whenever you're fighting.
Michael Venom Page says, yeah.
That just because
tall black
said,
guys.
Tall black guy. Yeah. He goes, because we're black. Me, Anderson, Izzy, we're going to get compared forever. He says he gets a lot of racism online.
Oh, yeah.
Does that happen?
Yeah, of course. Even like, I kind of hinted about it when I had the speech in New Zealand, where I used tall poppy syndrome to disguise it a little bit, which is also a big problem. But definitely, you get racism everywhere. I mean, like, it's like water off a duck's back almost. Like, one thing I find weird sometimes when I talk about it, especially when something happens in America, people are like, don't get involved in American politics. I'm like, bro, when I come here, a KKK guy is not going to be like, oh, no, you're from Nigeria or you're from New Zealand. No, I'm not going to discriminate. They just see you as black. So yeah, they're going to be racist towards you regardless of where you're from. Even him, he's got a beard. He looks like fucking ISIS or some shit. See how many times he gets stopped at the airport all the time. Stop. I'm sorry.
You can't go down this road, dude. You have nothing to do with terrorism or anything.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not saying that. Yeah,
sometimes I do get stopped.
He gets stopped a lot.
Because I look Muslim, but yeah. That's the world we live in.
But I still, hey, I love USA. Straight up, I do. I really do. It's one of the best countries in the world for cultures. Yeah. But mostly for food. That's one thing I keep thinking about.
I think you had mentioned once that there was just too much bread that you had to leave because there's so much good bread here.
Oh, yeah. The bread is nice, soft. Especially that brioche bread. That soft brioche bread. Like on burgers and shit. Like, was it, what one that I had? Was it,
it's pretty much Shake made Shack. Out of butter.
Oh, it's so soft. Yeah, that's the one. It's right by the New York.
Yeah.
Man, I go there. When we stay at the MGM, the one next to the T-Mobile, park. The Park MGM, yeah. I go there like twice every time I'm in Vegas and I'm just, oh, it's so soft. It's so soft. You can sleep on it.
All right. Last thing. What is, since we're talking about all this, what is the very first thing you're going to eat then?
Oh, after the fight?
Yeah.
Probably after Popeye's chicken. Probably Popeye's chicken. If it's still open, I'll get down there or it will be hard for me after the fight. So I'll send someone to go down there and get me some. But yeah, not him, definitely. Fuck no. He doesn't give a fuck. I'll send this guy. I'll ask someone.
Yeah, I'll run down to Popeye's chicken. No problem, mate.
Win a championship, send your head coach to get a chicken sandwich for you.
It's not one of those ones. But yeah, I mean, I'm just happy, man. I'm ready for this
weekend. We'll send Frank or Andre.
Yeah. Nah, they won't go. I wouldn't even do that to them. You hear us?
Thanks.
Well, thanks so much for taking
you guys.
Time to find me. I was going to say,
as always,
appreciate you.
Ready.
Thanks so much. And of course, this has been Jose Esther, UFC champion Israel Adesanya, and head coach Eugene Behrman of City Kickboxing. Find all of our content on our YouTube channel, social media, Facebook, Instagram.
Shout out to Casey as well behind the camera.
Shout out to Casey Heroes. Best mustache in the game.
Yeah.
All right.
We're out.
We're out. Thanks.
Easy.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.